you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday, which means it's time for the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hi, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. I'm mama away from Bordeaux, France to Madrid, Spain. Just playing some rock shows out here, like I do. I used to have a job. I never told you this. I had a job as a drill operator. It was, well, boring. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I see what you did there. It was boring. That was a good one. Much easier to understand than last week's herbivore joke. But thanks to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan for taking the time out of his busy Guns N' Roses sold out European tour to phone that one in. And while some of the jokes may be bad, terrible even, they are never boring. Anyone? I got a Duff McKagan joke of the week of my own I just heard the other day. Let me see if I get this one. Wit concert costs 45 cent. 50 cent with Nickelback. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. And speaking of never boring and speaking of keeping you on your toes at all times, we're keeping the bringing the creepy back to Talk is Jericho. I know you guys like the supernatural, paranormal, scary type of episodes. Today, we got filmmaker Josh Zeman here, the auteur, the director behind the Netflix documentary Killer Legends, which explores the origins of some of the most popular urban legends. You know, stories like The Hook and Scary Clowns. And how about poison Halloween candy? You've heard about them all, but what do we really know about them and what truth is behind them? Josh is going to tell us all about the real life true crime stories behind some of these and dispel some myths and explain in some cases which came first, the legend or the crime. And there's some really interesting things to talk about here. Urban legends. I've heard all these stories before. Which ones are true? Which ones are not? I can tell you what is true, that we're about ready to start back up with Fozzie. The summer touring schedule begins at the Rock USA Festival in Oshkosh, Wisconsin next week on July 12th. We are opening up the main stage. We're doing a bunch of festivals this month. We're doing Oshkosh. Then we're doing, as a matter of fact, I'm going to go check them all out right now. Hold on. Let's see what we got. Like I said, Oshkosh for the Rock USA Festival. Then the Cadott Rock Fest in Wisconsin. Then we're doing a show with Soil, our old buddy Soil, at the Peoria Riverfront in Peoria, Illinois. Then on the 15th at Belvedere, Illinois, at the Apollo Theater, it's Fozzie, 10 years. And Power Man 5000. So it's a nice little warm-up run before we head over to Europe. And then we start the Judas Rising Tour again in the States in August with Adelita's Way, Stone Broken, and The Stir. FozzieRock.com, all ticket information, and the place to buy Fozzie's classic, famous VIP meet and greets. We do a little private rock and roll concert for all our VIPs. We take pictures, we sign stuff. It's one of the best VIPs in the business. Go to FozzieRock.com for all VIP and ticket information for all our upcoming gigs. gigs as we continue the Judas Rising tour here with Fozzy. We're in Hungary on July 26th at the Pheasant Festival. How about July 27th in Prague, the Czech Republic at Futurum? That's our first time in the Czech Republic. Then we return to Zurich, Switzerland at Werk 21 on July 29th. Then we're at in Italy at the Rock Planet in Pinarello di Servia, July 31st in Italy. We're all over the place, man. We got a sold-out show in Aschaffenburg with Mr. Bager in Bochum, Germany on the 6th, and Berlin, Germany on August 4th, all across the entire European continents there, and then we finish it up at Bloodstock on August 12th. And then the Judas Rising tour begins, like I said, with Adelita's Way and Stone Broken, August 24th in Atlanta. Go to FozzyRock.com and check out all the show gig information. And don't forget, we're also doing Rock Allegiance in Camden, New Jersey on October 6th. So get your rock on this summer with Fozzy and get creeped out right now with Killer Legends documentarian filmmaker Josh Zeman is here on Talk is Jericho, exposing urban legends. Here we go. I'm here with Josh Zeman, and it's interesting because we have a mutual friend that we both worked with named George.
Flamondon.
Yeah, I can never pronounce his last name. Flamondon. So he's the guy that I did the Butch Cassidy Searching for His Gold show, and then he told me about you and the fact that you had done this documentary that's on Netflix now. I think it just came up recently.
Yeah.
Called Killer Legends.
Yeah, Killer Legends.
And you had done another movie called Cropsy, which was kind of the forefather to Killer Legends.
Yeah.
And basically, I'll just give the quick rundown and you take over. It's how urban legends became real or vice versa.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in all this?
I mean, good question. When I was doing Cropsy, that was about a case in my hometown about
Staten Island,
okay. New York. And in Staten Island, in the middle of Staten Island, was this abandoned mental institution called Willowbrook. And it had a really nefarious history. Horrific things happened.
Terrible.
There. Yeah.
It's funny because in the movie, a young Geraldo Rivera basically jumps the fence and runs in there. You see this. Explain what it was, because it was like hell on earth. And this is real, guys. This is real stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, this is full on. So this is like, and it's conditions like a horror film, and I'll get into like a little bit of that later, but basically you had 60 patients for one attendant. Kids were severely mentally retarded, totally disabled, developmentally disabled, and they were just running around like they were running amok. You know, you couldn't control them, and it's really weird. Like, we think about it now, like if there was a rubber band that fell on the floor, a whole bunch of developmentally disabled kids would like run and basically beat the shit out of each other for a rubber band.
Because it was a toy?
Because it was a toy, because it was something interesting. And one person couldn't pull them apart. And there was no ability to understand that you were hurting this other person. Or there was no ability to understand that you were sexually abusing this other person. Mm. Or there was this no, you know, they would all rip their clothes off. They would just go to the bathroom in the corners. It was horrific. You know, it was what they called at the time a snake pit mental institution. Severe overcrowding, and that was a lot of the urban legends. A lot of the other urban legends was that they were doing medical experiments on these kids, and in fact they were there was 100% rate of tuberculosis. And basically, it happens through feces, basically, because the kids just weren't clean. And so, but they were doing tests on them because they were trying to stop basically TB. I spoke to a doctor there who's like, oh, yeah, if it wasn't for those kids all getting TB, we wouldn't have cured.
Wow.
You know, it was hepatitis B.
So the legend was that they're performing medical experiments, but the truth was they really were performing.
Yeah, very much. And there was overcrowding. And so, you know, there was all these urban legends about an escaped mental patient who lived in the basement of these mental institutions, these buildings called Cropsy, who would come and get you. And we went to keg parties there and, you know, smoked dope, basically did everything you're not supposed to do. We did in these buildings. And there was always the urban legend. We didn't really think anything of it. It was just some story that our parents told us. And then when I was like 13, this little girl with Down syndrome disappeared from her neighborhood. And After this huge old school search, they found her body buried on the grounds of the mental institution. The urban legend had come real.
This is going through the woods, like you said, old school search through the woods, like hundreds of miles of woods.
These are abandoned buildings, you know what I'm saying? Fully scary. And so the urban legend was real. They really found this kid who had been, you know, found in a shallow grave in the woods. And the police arrest this dude, and he's not an escaped mental patient, but he's a former worker who had lived on the grounds in a campsite. And then the police revealed to the community that this guy had taken a bunch of other kids, but they could never find the bodies of those other kids, so they could never convict him of the crime. It's called corpus delicti, no body, no crime. And so that was this horrific nightmare of our youth. And he ended up going to jail, sent away. And, you know, I met a girl. We were talking about it. We're like, hey, remember that story when we were growing up, that guy Andre Ram? We're like, yeah. Remember that whole thing? That it was like a horror film we were dealing with, right? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, huh, interesting. I always want to re-explore that story. And literally like a week later, the district attorney announced that he was bringing this guy, Andre Rand, back to Staten Island to stand trial for this other little girl who had been taken even years before that. Never found her body, but her brother had grown up to become a police officer and kind of advocated for the DA to do this. They were basically trying to put another life sentence on him so that he would reveal where he buried the body. And so this became an opportunity for us to see if the nightmare, the urban legend of our youth was real.
It's unbelievable, though, because it's funny because I grew up in Winnipeg, Canada, mm-hmm. and we used to go to high school to go drink beer at the Haunted House. And there was another abandoned place. And I don't remember what the guy's name was, but there was some kind of myth of whatever, the Hammer Man or whatever, some bullshit thing. But it's interesting that all kids kind of have the same thread of like, don't go to the abandoned house or so-and-so will get you. But in this case, Cropsey became legit.
Yeah. I mean, in this case it was real, but I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, it's like, it's also like, it's a rite of passage for kids. You know, it's like, all right, let's go to the haunted house. You know, either you're with your friends and you're like, all right, who's going to go? Who's going to knock on the door? Who's got the balls enough to knock on the door? Or you go with a girl. You know, she's like, oh, I'm scared. You know, you're like, all right, come here, come a little closer. You know,
that's one thing I love about both documentaries. Is it your wife or your girlfriend that's in it?
It was my girlfriend at the time. Yeah.
And you do that. You go into the woods at night and she's freaking out and you're filming it. And I was like, this is totally what you would do. Take the girl. And then what happens in the movies is you take the girl in the woods and then the guy's waiting for you and you get your head chopped off.
Exactly.
In real life, it's probably not going to happen, but you're always thinking that.
It was totally true. And plus, this was the 80s. At the time, it was the 80s, so we had devil worshipping.
That was a big thing in the 80s, wasn't it, right?
Hell yeah. Like, you know, you had me at devil worshipping.
If you're a heavy metal guy,
totally,
you knew all about devil worshipping.
Metallica,
right?
My favorite album, Slayer, Master of Puppets. Venom, it was like Sanitarium, Master of Puppets, the whole nine yards. And so, it was really Danzig and Mother and all that stuff.
But still, the satanic, influences, her black wings and all that sort of thing. It was very dark.
Yeah. Totally. And so, and plus Son of Sam in. And that's like my jam, So, it was just this whole like conflux of stuff. It was like mental institutions and satanic panic. And so what's interesting is the movie came out and all these kids were like, oh, this is like my urban legend was the same thing. What's so interesting is that it became the basis for the second season of American Horror Story. And if you go to the last episode –
Which season? I'm a huge Horror Story fan.
Two.
Was that Coven?
No, it's Asylum.
Asylum, okay.
Asylum. So if you watch the last episode, Asylum, where the woman is doing it, it's pretty much a shot-for-shot remake of the footage that we used in Cropsey.
Don't they call him Cropsey in that?
I hope not.
Because I've heard that name before.
Well, Cropsey's pretty, well-known. So the interesting thing about Cropsey is that I was like, well, how did we get Cropsey? And actually, Cropsey came from Jewish sleepaway camps in upstate in the 1950s and 60s. And what happened was, I was at camp when I first heard the story on Staten Island. I was at the JCC camp, so it was Jewish Community Center camp. So I was at camp. But the popular film right at that moment was The Burning. And The Burning's character name was Cropsey. So the kids must have seen that movie. And this is the whole thing. This is where we get into this whole
thing.
It's telephone. It's co-opting stories and remaking them. And that's what we do as filmmakers. You know, we just co-op.
Because The Killer and the Burning was Cropsey, right?
That's right.
That's where I heard it before.
That's right.
With the garden shears.
With the garden shears, right? Crop, cut, you know, the whole nine yards. Now, the funny thing was, who made that movie? It was Bob Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Harvey Weinstein, Bob Weinstein, that was their first movie. Weinstein Company, that was the first movie. And so they made a documentary about their camp, about the urban legend of their camp when they went to a Boy Scout camp.
When they were kids.
When they went to a Jewish sleepaway camp in upstate New York.
Oh, wow.
So that story then comes and like gets transferred via the movies down to my little neck of the woods, and we co-opt it, and we call this, you know, this other dude Cropsey, who was taking kids, but this happened to be somewhat real. And what was interesting also is, like, you can't tell a kid, like, don't go in the woods, there's a pedophile in the woods. That does, you know, that,
right,
that doesn't sell.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I'd be like, okay, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
what I'm,
yeah,
saying,
yeah.
Kick the shit out of him. So but if you're like, no, don't go in the woods, and there's an abandoned mental patient, there's a mental patient who lives in the basement, kids are going to be like, okay.
Because,
you know,
that was the thing within the Cropsey movie. Because, like I said, the Cropsey is kind of the first part of this story that we're talking about. There was kind of an underground system at the Willowbrook that they thought, or you thought, or some people thought that they lived underneath.
Oh, they all thought.
And that Andre Rand, who is the guy convicted of these murders,
that's right,
was kidnapping the children and then passing them around to other mentally disturbed people that were living under the tunnel.
So here's the deal, right? This is where, like, you know, okay, what's real and what's not, you know? And this is like, so this is the funny thing. There's kid urban legends, you know, which is like, Cropsey's gonna come and get you. Don't, you know, don't do that. You know, don't babysit, you know? And then there's adult urban legends. And adult urban legends are Satan worshipers, pedophile rings, you know, Pizzagate, you know, those are adult urban legends. Adult urban legends are like, you know, these kind of different stories or especially about, like, oh, the babysitter, like, put the kid in the oven. Like, that's an adult legend.
How about this one? Did you ever hear that? And this is a little bit kind of, it was Rod Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
And then you heard about Bon Jovi, that he collapsed on stage with, like, maybe this is a Canadian thing, with a stomach full of semen.
No.
Did you ever hear that one?
Rod Stewart collapsed
Rod Stewart on stage? First and then Bon Jovi. And then he collapsed on stage. He had a stomach pump and it was filled with semen. Maybe that must be a Canadian thing. Everybody in Canada knows a version of that. Yeah, and Canadians will back me up on
John
this.
Bon Jovi's from New Jersey. He was like right across. He's from like Perth Amboy. So as a Staten Island guy, I should know him more than anybody.
But there are, like you said, these urban myths. Like I heard the babysitter put the baby in the oven. Well, I heard that the whole time.
That's a parental urban legend. It's about parents, like first-time parents, being like totally freaked out about leaving their kid at home,
right?
And that's, and it was also about in the 70s and 60s, it was like, oh, all those hippie freaks,
yeah, because I always, like, she was so high on,
she was
like,
so
LSD,
high on that, you're right,
she thought the baby was
I
a turkey,
put the baby in the oven, the turkey's basting.
Now, there's never been any documentation of this ever happening,
no,
but when you go into some of the stuff you discuss in Killer Legends,
yeah,
I loved, well, you know, obviously, this is very deep and sad subjects, but I loved how you did it in that you went to find, like, did you put up a list of urban legends and see what you could find that fit it?
Literally, we're like, okay, well, so what people really liked about Cropsey, they're like, this was an urban legend that turned real.
Yeah.
But when you look at urban legends, they're typically stories that are created from, like, typically, like, murder mysteries that are never solved.
Right.
And then a parent or somebody will co-opt that story and use it for their own, like, to tell their kid to don't go do something, right?
Yeah,
so The Hook. You know, The Hook is, like, the most famous urban legend.
And then give the background. What's the story?
Right. So basically, it's, like, two kids making out in a car in, like, you know, Lover's Lane. And, you know, they're making out and they hear on the radio, you know, an mental patient, of course, has escaped, or some guy from a prison, lock your doors, careful, he's going to go after you. And, like, of course, this happens, like, right as, like, the guy and the girl are about to have sex, you know, and she's like, I don't want to, you know, stop, I want to go home. He's all pissed off because he's not going to get any. He's like, fine. And, like, takes the car and he, like, throws the car and jerks it in reverse and just drives out of there. And then he gets home and then he walks out. He goes to, like, open the door for her and he looks upon her door and there's, like, The Hook in the door handle, and basically the idea is like they were moments away from getting killed, and thank God she was like, I don't want to go through with having sex.
Because the mental patient had a hook for a hand, right?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, so that it's a wholesome Puritan thing, you know, it's like, don't have sex in cars, or like, don't like, and well, so.
It's like the movie Scream. One of the rules of horror movies is don't have sex ever.
So this is the whole thing with urban legends. There's always some kind of morality thing, you know, whether it's for parents, like don't leave your kid with the hippie babysitter because they're going to cook them, or the babysitter story, the other side of the babysitter story, which is when a stranger calls.
Yeah.
Which is like one of the first times a real like urban legend was taken exact into a movie, when a stranger calls, which is, you know, the babysitter's at home, you know, and she's babysitting and the call keeps coming in and she's like, officer, can you trace the call? And he's like, get out of the house. Get out. It's coming from inside the house. You know?
Classic. Yeah.
Classic. And so, but that's an anti-feminist rant about how women shouldn't be in the workplace and instead they should be at home taking care of their children. Like it's against babysitting, basically.
Wow.
Because the girl in like the urban legend, the girl's like talking to the boyfriend,
right?
Like the boyfriend may be coming over and they're having sex on the couch and she wasn't paying attention. So
which basically the whole movie Halloween is based around that. Exactly.
And yeah. So they're all the same, like, morality play. They're all like, don't do this. Don't go to Vegas or else you'll wake up in a tub, you know, without a kidney.
Without a kidney?
You know, don't go to – you know, don't have sex with this person. A lot of us don't have sex, you know. Yeah. Don't have sex or don't do this. Don't go to, like, you know, China. Who the f*** knows? You know, it's all this crazy stuff.
Organ grinders.
Yeah, you know, and so it's really interesting how they use these urban legends as morality plays. So the interesting thing is they still do it today. The internet, you know, Slenderman, or, you know, they kill it. Like,
what's Slenderman?
Slenderman is like the big one now, which was kind of big back then, but, you know, big like a couple of years ago, which is basically he's the guy who, you know, appears in pictures, you know, and he's has long arms and long, you know,
shadow figure.
He's a shadow figure, you know, and that's a. And he's also a proxy killer, you know. And so that's just like – it's about the evils of the internet, you know. And like careful where you're digging. Don't – careful which site you go to.
Wasn't there actually some kids that killed for the Slender Man?
Yes, there were kids that killed.
So once again, your urban legend becomes true.
Because this is the whole thing about urban legends. It's this thing called ostension. It's this crazy game that happens with urban legends. I tell you a story. By definition of me telling you the story takes on a new life. And then typically it sometimes becomes real. It's hard to explain, but it's like the minute you say it, it becomes real. And then somebody will do it. You know, it's like, okay, it's like copycat suicides.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
But kids will do it.
I'm thinking right now, Kurt Cobain, when he killed himself,
right?
Kids killed himself as a result.
It's ostension. Somebody does it, and then another person. It's not like copycatting, but you know, it's that same exact thing. If I tell you that there's a killer out there named Slenderman, and you can't really like say yes or no, but like he's out there, and then suddenly, you know, these two girls kill somebody else in his name, he becomes real. Mm-hmm. He wasn't real before, but when the girls did it, he suddenly became real. Did they think he was real before they did it? Yes. Like,
it's chicken and the egg now at this point, right?
And that's what's kind of cool about it. So when I did Killer Legends, it was 2 years ago, there was no evil clown thing. There was no clown thing. And in fact, George was like, what are you doing with this clown? Or this is our producer at the time.
Yeah,
you know, he's like, wait a second. The clown thing doesn't really have an urban legend. I'm like, no, there is an urban legend about the clown, you know. And I was really into evil clowns because, like, my favorite character in all the movies at the time was Batman, you know. And I was into the Heath Ledger story because Heath Ledger had basically died right at that moment. And then so I was really interested in, like, Jack Nicholson saying, don't do the Joker, it's evil.
Well, here's an urban legend that may or may not be true as well, that Heath Ledger was so dropped into this character and it was so evil that he could never come out of it.
That's exact. So I was like working off that. I was into clowns, you know.
So Jack Nicholson, sorry to interrupt you, but Jack Nicholson told Heath, don't do this character, it's too fucked up, too evil?
Something like that.
Wow.
So I was totally into that story.
Because he plays such a great Joker. But like you said,
he's off the chain.
He's so dropped in. I heard like he took a lot of sleeping pills. So he never sleep because he was.
Have you ever seen the where he does the Tom Waits. Have you ever seen the Tom Waits interview?
No.
Oh, dude, you have to
Heath
see
Ledger?
That. So Heath Ledger gets the idea to play the Joker like that from this Tom Waits interview where he does this whole Tom Waits is like smoking a cigarette and he's like, oh, my God, you know. Mm. And so you have to – so Tom Waits went to Australia and did this unbelievable interview. He's just like – it's like the equivalent of what – Crispin Glover on Dave Letterman.
Right,
it is classic.
So into it, yeah.
And so if you watch this interview and you put them together, it's all on YouTube. You'll see it. And so that was part of it. And so I was very interested in clowns. Stephen King was my favorite. It was my favorite movie.
Pennywise.
Yeah. And so I was just totally into clowns. So I do this clown thing. And by the time the movie comes out, I did the clown thing. The movie comes out. And one of the first clown things was in Staten Island, New York, and I was like, why would a clown thing happen in Staten Island? Like, maybe there was some kind of connection there. And then about a year later, all the clown things really just started to
and
pick
you're
up.
Talking about when you would see random clowns in the street.
I'm talking about the real so
explain what let's talk about the clown legend. I still want to go back to the hook.
Sure,
let's go into the clown though.
So the clown, so basically the idea is how did clowns become creepy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they used to never be creepy. They were always Bozo the Clown. Now, some people always think clowns are creepy.
And then you show the footage of Bozo the Clown in the movie. He looks freaking crazy. It's scary as hell.
I know.
You know, I've never been scared of clowns, but now that everyone talks about it, I can totally see it. Like, Bozo looked crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like a monster.
Well, you're always saying, like, who's the dude with the pancake makeup and why is he touching children?
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, that
with
guy's
the crazy red hair sticking out of the side like
exactly.
a horn.
Exactly, and it's like, ugh.
Right, so but the idea was clowns used to be kid-friendly.
They used to be.
Right.
But before that, they used to be kind of evil, too. You know, when they were the court jesters. The court jesters were never really like...
They're kind of looked down upon, right?
Yeah, well, they were like... They had a certain power in the king. They could always make fun of the king, and, you know, so they were wily characters.
Oh, I see.
But then we got clowns, and then we sanitized them. We brought them... They used to only be in the big top. And by the way, they always used to play drunks.
Mm, right. Good point.
You know,
falling down, bumping each other. Yeah.
Or like patchwork clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You
like
know, hobos, bums, right? Mm-hmm. And then like we brought them into the, we brought them into our homes, and then they suddenly became very, like, up in our faces, and then they became part of clown parties, and then everybody started to get really freaked out. Like, again, who's the dude? Who's wearing this makeup?
Right.
And then so we kind of looked at that. And, you know, of course, everybody talks about the creepy clown, John Wayne Gacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now he never really like dressed up as a clown and killed anybody like some of those movies. But we wanted to chart that history.
But he did have a clown persona.
He did. He had a couple personas. He also had the persona of the fake cop where he would go to.
Wow.
He would like troll little kid hustlers, boy hustlers,
right.
And then put cuffs on them and bring them home.
And this is what in the movie talking about, he murdered like 35
kids. Yeah, yeah.
Boys.
Yeah.
All like that's just, you forget how prolific of a serial killer, maybe the worst of all time in our country.
He was pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, but what was really cool was in the early 80s. This is pre Stephen King and pre Poltergeist, there was this thing called phantom clown scares. This guy, Lauren Coleman, was the first one to kind of figure it out. And this is pre-internet. Basically, we went to Chicago where it first happened, and there were kids from all these different communities who would see clowns driving around in white vans.
Hmm.
And the white van is always a tip that it's a pedophile thing.
That's right.
Right. So it was always, but clowns had another, like, it was like an addition to that.
Hmm.
And it was just freaky and very weird. This would jump from community to community, like black kids, Hasidic kids. Hmm. Nobody knew how it traveled pre-internet. And so this was in Chicago, and so we were looking at John Wayne Gacy, and we were like, was that connected? But this was happening all over. It would go from, like, Chicago to Scotland to Pittsburgh to Boston. Mm. Boston had a big one, New York. And so when that happened, there was never any certifiable sighting of a clown. In our show, we're like, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if we dressed a guy up as a clown and drove him in a white van through an African-American neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
just to see what happens.
Right.
We did it, and people freaked out.
Mm.
They were calling the cops. They were like literally like gangbangers who were like, yo, that's not funny. You know, like they –
You guys are lucky you didn't get shot.
Yeah, but it was pretty interesting just to see the reaction. Mm-hmm. Like suddenly people just went – blank.
Right.
They freaked.
Like bad gangster bangers would see.
They suddenly, yeah, they were like
little kids,
13 years old. You know what I'm saying? It was just very interesting to see that visceral reaction. And suddenly, like about 6 months later, we started to see people actually dressing up. And that's the difference. Before, people weren't dressing up. And then they did. And of course, the end of that piece was to talk about just how the clown has finally come full circle with Heath Ledger becoming the Joker. Joker's like, I'm an agent of chaos, you know? And then I forget the guy's name, Scott Holmes.
In Aurora. The Colorado shooting, yeah, the movie theater.
Yeah, where he was had orange hair. Like, so that is Ascension. That is the Joker is on screen. A guy comes in and he shoots all these people in Aurora and he takes the Joker and makes him real.
It's interesting because I thought that was kind of a, not a stretch, but I never thought of that. But with the orange hair, and that kind of is the,
he totally was,
you know, Paganini type of a clown type thing.
He was becoming the Joker, and the Joker was the ultimate. The Joker is the ultimate FU to you know, to society. You know,
and it's interesting too. Even this year in Tampa, there was a couple of news stories where, like, you know, watch the kids in the streets because there was the random clown guys walking around.
That never used to be
just
like
to
that.
Scare people or whatever. But you get a freaking shot walking around like that, you know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, and so this was a couple of years ago, and then it became like
a thing.
Then it became a full on thing, and then it got tied into the alt right. So now there's another part of this whole thing, which was a lot of people think the African American fear of the white clown came from the fear of the Ku Klux Klan, you know. White sheet, yeah, yeah, the whole nine yards. So
white face covering.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of crazy history with that.
It's interesting how you're able to tie it together.
Mm-hmm.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Let's go back to the hook. Now, yeah, you tell the story about the hook being on the door handle.
Yeah.
Because everyone heard that one. I heard it too. It's a great campfire story, right, when you're at sleep.
So where did
camp.
That come from, right?
Where did it come from? What's your...
Well, you know, it was a story to prevent kids from having
making out in cars.
But there were a couple instances of kids making out in cars who were actually killed. And that was in... it was interesting. It's called the Moonlight Murderers in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so interesting was it was like four cases of some guy going around putting a white like sheet over his face and killing kids in cars.
This is real.
Mm. Moonlight Murders, Texarkana, Texas, 1950s, created a huge panic. Nobody had ever solved the case. And we don't know if that's where it came from, but there's other people who say it actually came from Carol Chessman, who was a killer in L.A., in Mulholland, doing the same thing. Now, what's so interesting is you always have killers going to lovers' lanes. It's just what killers do, you
in
know?
Real life.
In real life. Yeah. Son of Sam.
Right.
Go. It's like...
Zodiac killer.
Zodiac. Yeah. So basically, you have a guy who's mentally fucked up. Can we curse on this?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You have a guy who's mentally fucked up, right? He can't get laid, can't do anything like that. And so he's, how does he go and get off? He watches a couple have sex and then he shoots them. Mm-hmm. That's him getting off. And so it's kind of real, but it's kind of, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's where this whole like thing came from. And then it just becomes, again, parents took at least a case in the Moonlight Murders. They took the fact that the crime wasn't solved. And they said to their kids years later, don't go make out in cars or else the Moonlight Murderer is going to get you.
The Hook Man.
The
yeah.
Hook Man. And then it becomes the Hook Man. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's very interesting how they get co-opt that story. And again, stories are co-opted for whatever's in vogue at the time. Back then, 1950s and 60s, cars. Teenagers and cars. American Graffiti. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it was.
Right.
today, video games. I could show you five urban legends about endless video games, or the death level of a video game, or, you know, playing for 24 hours. Now, right. Some of you say, well, no, that's true. Sure, it is true, but, you know, there's a lot of urban legends. Or now, you know, the chat Slender Room, Slender Man, you know, in the chat room.
Right.
So they're all the urban legends are always relative of the time.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting, too, because you mentioned that movie, The Town That Feared Sundown.
Right. So that's cool.
It was like the first, basically one of the first slasher films based on this Texarkana hookman.
Right. So the cool thing is this guy, Charles B. Pierce, lives in Texarkana. He loves this story, and he makes this movie about it called The Town That Dreaded Sundown. What's so interesting is that he doesn't do a movie like a typical slasher movie. It's not fiction. This guy says, you know what? I want to take the fact that it was never solved and do a kind of – it was his version of a found footage film. Mm. It was his version of Blair Witch. Mm-hmm. He kind of made it like the hook man is still around, you know, and, you know, the phantom killer is still around and he may be coming to you, you know. And at the end of the film, it's unbelievable. The guy's got vision. You see the feet of the killer, you know, right. He's the feet. You
standing
see him
in line.
Online to go see the movie. Brilliant. Yeah. And everybody's like, and it blew people away. People were like, holy shit. I've never seen like a meshing of reality and film. The guys who did Blair Witch said that Charles B. Pierce was one of the inspirations for Blair Witch. Now, this guy does another film. He does another film called The Legend of Boggy Creek. It's a classic horror film that actually freaked a lot of kids out.
Was it based on a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch?
Based upon a Sasquatch, you know.
I didn't know that the same guy did those.
So same dude. So this guy makes like a little cottage industry of making these films that are some part real and some part not. And so the funny thing is, this is where Jason Blumhouse comes in. These guys are horror producers. Mm-hmm. And so this is the ironic thing, right? We go and I'm learning about The Town That Dreaded Sundown. I'm learning about the truth behind the hook, and I'm learning about the real story of the hook. And I'm like, oh my God. So it happened in Texarkana, and I'm doing some research, and I'm like, they play the movie on the anniversary of when it happened in the place where it happened for all the kids in the town to see.
The actual murders happened.
Yeah.
They show a screening of the movie about the murders that happened there.
In there, right?
Wow.
And so that's basically the whole idea is called legend tripping, right? When you go to the haunted house in your neighborhood, you are what's called legend tripping. You go, you explore the legend that you grew up with, and you trip it out. I don't know. It's like it's a folklore term. Legend tripping. This town is collectively legend tripping because they're all going to the space where the murders happen, and somebody is telling them a story via the movie about what happened.
Right.
And I went, we interviewed the Park and Rec guy.
Is it Texarkana?
It's Texarkana, yeah. Texas. We interviewed the Parks and Rec guy. I'm like, and he's just like, it's hysterical. You know, it's like Parks and Rec meets a horror film. I don't know what to say, you know? And as we're there, Blumhouse announces that they're making a movie, a remake of The Town That Dreaded Sundown. And in the movie, it's two people at that screening who are relatives.
Oh.
Like, and I'm like, holy shit, Rachel, who had been doing the movie with the time. We're like, we are documentarians looking at this story, and now they're making a narrative film about documentarians looking at this story. Like, it was like, you didn't know where this.
Did it ever come out?
Yeah. Okay. I never saw it, but people said they like it.
Okay. Because there is one, just before we move on, there's two things if you haven't seen it. One is that it's the only other thing I've ever seen Marianne from Gilligan's Island in.
I know.
She might have been on Love Boat or Fantasy Island, I'm sure, but as far as the movie. And then there's a great death scene where a girl gets tied up to a tree and gets stabbed by a trombone where the guy's playing the trombone with a knife tied to the end of it, and he's blowing the trombone into her back.
There's some real like sex stuff going on there where the dude's blowing a trombone and it's spearing the girl. I was like, oh my God. Like,
but didn't you say, but you said that the idea from that is she was a musician And in the movie, she plays trombone because they wanted to do the death. But in real life, the real girl played like saxophone or something.
Yes, exactly. The real girl. Yeah, like it had nothing to do with that. But, you know, that's taking creative license.
Sure, but she did was actually a musician playing a brass instrument. So.
Yeah, so I can't tell you how many questions we had to field whether or not, you know, the trombone was really real.
Killed. You mentioned it in passing. Let's go to the babysitter.
Yeah.
Like we said, the famous one of like the crank call, call the cops. And then, oh, my God. God, the call's coming from upstairs. I mean, we've all heard that one.
Yep.
So what kind of
so made that come to- the amazing thing is, right? And it's not just that. Like, there's 8,000 movies that came out in the 80s about the babysitter getting killed,
and of Halloween course, being the first.
Absolutely. So and like Scream being like, you know, so much so that, you know, everybody got it nostalgic and, you know, that's where the rules come in, right? You know, can't be a slut, you know,
right,
you know. Because if you're a slut, you're going to get killed.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be pure of heart and mind. And so, we're like, oh, there's got to be cases of like babysitters getting killed. Could not find many cases of all of babysitters getting killed, which is so weird, right? The girl is home alone. And you would just think, like, some bad shit is going to happen, like boyfriends who go too far or something. And surprisingly, we didn't find that many cases, but we found one, and it ends up being wickedly horrific because, like, this babysitter gets killed. She's, like, 13 years old. She's kind of overdeveloped, and, like, it's just, like, became kind of weird. And then
strangled with an iron cord, right?
Yeah, and then it, and this is so. This is weird, right? This is in Mizzou. Where's that?
Mizzou.
Columbia.
Oh,
Missouri.
Missouri. Yeah, yeah.
You're right. Mizzou, Columbia, and so where Mizzou, the university, is.
Gotcha.
And so this happens in Columbia, Missouri, and so basically, this white babysitter gets killed, and the police in the 1950s find the black guy, round him up, and like kill him,
like quickly,
like not a long trial. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, another babysitter gets killed. And then everybody's like, and rather than being like, I think it was like, rather than being like, maybe we did the wrong thing, they find another black guy and kill him. Yeah. You know, it's like, and I'm just sitting there like speaking to like the locals. I was like, was this, because I just didn't get it. You know, it was Missouri, you know? And I'm like, is this like, you know, like a real racist thing happened in Missouri? The woman's like, hell yeah, it's bad here. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any idea. Mm-hmm. And then about 6 weeks, 6 months later, that whole problem happened at University of Missouri, I guess, or Mizzou. And then, you know, they had some whole issue. So it was just very interesting to see how race came into it. But that was one of the only cases of that we found of a babysitter really getting killed.
Thinking once again, like, I babysat when I was a kid.
Sure.
And you were so scared when it hit that kids go to bed and just be sitting there. Like, if someone knocks on the door, I'm going to freak out.
Yeah.
But to not find anything.
Well, we didn't find many. But, of course, the irony is there were a lot of cases. There's a lot of cases on the flip side. There are cases of babysitters not cooking the kids, but, like,
beating the kids
or whatever, or the boyfriend beats the kids, boyfriend comes over and beats the kids. So there really were a lot of those situations, but not a lot of the lone girl getting killed in the house
by the stranger.
Yeah, you know,
because even the one you're talking about is the guy that might have been the killer. I can't remember what his name was. It was the white guy.
Yeah.
He was friends with the babysitter.
He had tried to get the babysitter to babysit for his kids.
Right. So he knew that she was alone.
He knew that she was alone. So it was an adult. You know what I'm saying? It was like a neighbor, a friendly neighbor of all like the families who are getting babysitting done. You know what I'm saying? So of course, like it was the dad. You know, so, like in a way.
So how do you, like, if you're gonna do this, and you said we couldn't find any cases of a babysitter getting,
we wouldn't do that case then.
Sure, I understand. But how do you even research it? Like, what do you do? You're talking about a whole history of the United States
for. A good 4 weeks we searched for cases of babysitters getting killed or being killed.
You just Google that at first?
Just hours and hours and hours of it.
And then you see something where it says, okay, like there's Mizzou. And then do you call the Mizzou police department? Like, how do you kind of get involved?
No, like they'll typically be like in that one, I think it was just like looked in old newspapers, you know, it's just like research, you know, and a lot of them, like for years, like I had gone through and like gotten a fairly good list of urban legends that had become true, you know. And there's a lot of them, you know. Again, a lot of them, a lot of our urban legends all have some sort of truth behind them. It is the fact that it's a case that doesn't get solved, or there's some mystery, or there's some question, and then that allows you as the storyteller to take that and then be like, okay, you know, and use it, co-opt it.
Was there any that you found out that you couldn't use for they weren't as exciting or for time purposes?
Organs, you know, there were a lot of
Waking up with the
The question was that really happening? And like it was happening, but people were selling them. But then that's changed. Like now there really are were cases, but before there weren't that many cases.
Like drugging somebody and taking out their kidney.
Yeah. You know,
literally putting him in the ice and all that stuff.
No, not like, okay. not that bad, but like there was a case in New Jersey of some guys who were like, they weren't stealing organs, but they were definitely like selling organs. So you would go to them and be like, I'll give you my kidney for 40 grand.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. A couple of Israelis. there were definitely a whole bunch of them. We looked at the Dungeons and Dragons one.
Which one is that?
Well, that's all like Dungeons and Dragons. You know, in the 80s, everybody's like, you're going to kill somebody over Dungeons and Dragons. You know, you're going to get possessed or something that. And it was interesting. There were cases of people getting killed in Dungeons and Dragons, but it was more that the kids were just like totally fucked up. And then when they had an opportunity to blame it on something, the priest was like, was it Dungeons and Dragons? The kid was like, yeah, that's it.
Well, it's just like the same thing with heavy metal with like the backwards messages of Judas Priest and
Ozzy. My God.
You know, like I said, if you were a metal guy or a Dungeons and Dragons guy, my poor mom, I was both.
Right.
So I was really going to be
totally,
you know, a satanic priest or whatever. But it's interesting what you just said. There was something in the movie too where you said, listen, if you show somebody a picture and go,
all right, yeah,
this guy looks like a killer, right?
Yeah.
Or this guy looks like a priest, right? People will go, you're right.
Yeah.
It's interesting with that power of suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can see that coming through. Do you think, like, for example, like the Andre Rand, who was the Cropsey,
yeah,
never admitted to it, double, you know, life sentence.
Sure.
Do you think that he had done some of this?
Well, as somebody always says, the murder stopped when he was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to just look at it kind of logically. I think he did something.
Right.
I don't think he did all of it. You know, that's the problem. Like, typically what happens in like a law enforcement scenario is you get one guy who does something bad, and then law enforcement just loves to like pile on all the old cases. Because
they want the conviction.
Yeah, of course.
Then, you know,
they want the closures.
To give the parents the closure.
No, or their books.
Or their – right, right.
Their stats. Right. It's all stats, you know, these days. So, I mean, I've done shows. I did a show called The Killing Season that's on Amazon where we went around and looked at unsolved serial killer cases because of Long Island. You know, Long Island
– what's Long Island?
In Gilgo Beach, Long Island, there were 10 sex workers who were killed and whose remains were buried on this one.
Sex workers?
Prostitutes.
Okay, gotcha.
Who were all killed and their remains were all dumped on this highway called Gilgo Beach. And
what year is this?
2000. 80s? Oh, 2013.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's real recent. Okay. Yeah, this is real recent. It's probably one of the most bizarre serial killer cases I've ever seen in my life, which is why I spent 2 years investigating it.
So they would put the remains on the beach, and you said the police.
They put the remains on the beach, but some were whole, others were just body parts. And the Suffolk County Police in Long Island, they couldn't figure out what was going on, and the police were just fumbling it. And it was actually, I think it's two killers. And then from that, we looked at all these other cases of sex workers around the country who are being killed via serial killer: Atlantic City, Daytona, Oklahoma, Albuquerque, and then just to try and see if there was a pattern between them. So it's very interesting.
Like you mentioned for the Gilgo Beach, you thought there were two killers. Did they actually find anybody?
No, they've never found anybody.
Because that's the thing you always hear, too, that serial killers will eventually give themselves up. Or maybe that's an urban legend as well. How can you kill 13 people and not get caught?
It's a good question. Serial killers don't usually get caught. They usually die or go to prison for something else.
Oh, get busted for stealing a car or something.
Yeah, or not really that. Like domestic abuse or rape or something like that. So in this case, I don't know if these guys are ever going to get caught. There's two of them. I believe it's two of them. One is the guy by the name of the Manorville Butcher. He's a torso killer. And the other
What's a torso killer?
Torso killers are very he's like one of the worst kinds of serial killers, a torso killer. There's not that many of them, but there was one in Cleveland. A torso killer gets enjoyment from basically cutting off arms and legs and watching and like that kind of like...
Well, someone's still alive?
Sadistic, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Versus somebody else who just like smother you and kill you.
Shoot you, whatever.
Yeah, and so basically they were finding all these dismembered body parts and they couldn't figure out whether the guy was really dismembering as a what's called a forensic countermeasure. I don't want you to know what I'm doing, so I'm going to chop you up and spread your body parts all around so that way the police can't even know what's going on, versus a guy who's like doing it for enjoyment.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
how is it, it's like the movie Pieces, you know?
Yeah.
How is that for you, like, you know, as a, you know, even just, and we'll get into some of these other subjects, but just to see how far down the hole the human race can go, does that affect you as a person? Because it bums me out, man.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, that actually, I felt we were really helping a lot of sex workers have a voice. Their mothers, their family members felt that the police did not give a shit. Society just didn't give a shit because they were sex workers, and it's
prostitutes,
like,
right?
Yeah, no little girl ever wants to grow up to become a prostitute. Mm-hmm. You know, sorry, doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? And you know, a lot of them fell into opioids. You know, like I very early, this is a year and a half ago, we were like sitting here saying it's a combination of opioids and sex work and Backpage just creating this perfect storm where violence against sex workers is up 70%. Like, I felt good that we were
exposing some of that.
Yeah, and A&E, you know, A&E was the guys who did it. They were just like, like, can't we go back to showing like some like light shit, you know? I was like, no, this is fucking hardcore. We're going hardcore.
Have you ever thought, just out of curiosity, about the Jack the Ripper case?
I have. That was very interestingly enough, Jack the Ripper, you know, it's the beliefs that there were two of them. And one,
really?
Yeah, one was a torso killer. It's called the Whitechapel murders. So that was a very interesting thing. And there's a big parallel in the killing season to the Jack the Ripper case, because it's believed that Jack the Ripper, actually, there's two of them, and one was a torso killer and the other guy was being a copycat. And the same thing basically happens in Long Island.
So do these two guys know of each other?
That's the whole thing.
Are they working in tandem, or?
It's like, it's not like some movie. It's, you're trying to be like, well, is it like some like crazy like Kiss the Girls movie or something like that, you know? And it's like, no, it's like, it's all ego. Basically, one guy gets in the paper, the other guy gets pissed off, and he's gonna go in and try and like,
he wants the attention,
do it better. Yeah,
and that's what you were saying about the John Wayne Gacy dressing as a clown, that he didn't dress as a clown to attract children. He did it to be the center of attention.
Yeah,
that's what he wanted.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a big ego with these killers, right?
Right.
Because wasn't one of the Jack the Ripper, one of the rumors is that it was like a royal, like a prince or something?
Yeah,
like this?
I mean, I don't, you know, if you read, that is definitely one of the things. Mm-hmm. I don't know as much, but we got a lot of, they're called Ripperologists, looking at our case on Long Island. Just because, like, oh my God, a modern day
Jack the Ripper
case. And it kind of was, because it was after sex workers. You know what I'm saying? And there's always this kind of very old school or like primal like thing between serial killers and sex workers. That's what I was trying to look at. Like, why? You know, and it's like, because sex workers are willing to go with guys, expose themselves, basically.
Right. Just, you know, on a promise of some money.
Right. And they're willing participants. So they become the easiest prey. And so that was a very interesting kind of like...
You can draw them into your room with no worries whatsoever, because that's what they do.
And the internet changed all that. You know, it used to be everybody was like, oh, you know, it was very interesting. These girls were saying to me that back in the old days, I don't know, you know, they would approach a car, they'd lean into the car window.
Right.
And they would be able to be like, they could tell, they had spidey sense. Uh-huh. And the spidey sense would say, clean car, baby seat in the back, guy's a dad.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to get paid and he's not going to be gross. And, you know, he's not going to go, you know, versus like a car where like, shit's everywhere and it's really gross and it's like the guys, you know, bad hygiene, and they're like, you know, I don't know, you know. And so, but the internet happens, and then it's meet me at the Holiday Inn, and they would Yeah.
With no...
There's no...
What's the word? Pre-interview.
There's no, like, look-see.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the whole thing. Like, you make a decision about a person in, like, 0.3 seconds. I walk in, I look at you. I'm like, oh, this guy's this and this.
Right.
Then you get to change that decision. You know, and these girls, they don't... You know, that was their spidey sense, you know? But when you open up the door... to a hotel room, because now with via the internet, now it's to a hotel room. Now it's meet me at room 305, right. You know?
Like us.
Right, exactly. Right? At the Holiday Inn, 305, yeah. Right off the Long Island Expressway. Mm. We're gonna get this done. Mm. You know? And so the girl, like, the door opens and whoever it is like, come on in. And he's probably half hidden behind the door. So suddenly that whole exchange is no longer there.
Yeah.
She steps in the room. Door closes.
Done.
And then they have that moment. But by that point...
That's all it takes.
It's done.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, if it's a bad deal, two guys jump out of the closet and then it's a party.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And she's like, whoa, this is not what I signed up for. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But it's too late at that point.
Too late. So the internet, everybody's like, oh, the internet's so good. It's going to, you know, it's going to give these girls, they won't have pimps. And yes, that's absolutely true. They won't. But you just don't realize the new level.
Don't have that moment of your own human instincts.
Yeah.
And Josh is a true rocker. I know, open a bottle with a lighter. I could never do that. Open a beer with a lighter. Here's another one then. This one is the one I wanted to save for the last one. Because it's something that we've all gone through as kids. And now I have three kids. I don't know if you have kids or not. But it's the Halloween, the trick-or-treat, the candy man.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they go out for candy, you bring it home and you look through the treats. And anything that looks fishy, you throw it away. If there's a razor blade in it.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And my dad, I can vividly remember my dad doing it too. And you're laughing, mocking me.
I'm not mocking.
But I'm in a fun way. Like, up until I watched this today, because I watched your movie today, Killer Legends, I never knew the real story behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So tell everyone, because this one out of all of them blew my mind, because it's something that I relate to.
Right.
You know?
Basically, in Houston, Texas, there was a little kid, O'Brien.
Timothy O'Brien.
Timmy O'Brien, yeah. Right. I think he's eight or something like that. He had gone trick-or-treating with his dad and his family, and he got home and he ate a pixie stick, and he swallowed the sugar in the pixie stick, and he died.
And pixie stick that his dad picked out for him.
Yeah, and it was cyanide. There was cyanide in the pixie stick, and it was a horrific. You know, this is on Halloween, and it was a horrific story, and it kind of made a little bit of sense to the police. And then they started to take the dad, Ronald O'Brien, through his store. And he's like, oh, I got the candy from this house over here. But then they went to the house and there's like, oh, we didn't give out pixie sticks, you know. And suddenly they start taking them back through the story over and over again. And basically they bring him in for questioning. And he's like, well, you know, my son had a poison pixie stick. It happens all the time. And the police started to go through and look, and they realized it doesn't happen all the time. Like, people aren't really being poisoned by pixie sticks. And then they realized that this guy had poisoned his own son. The reason,
for insurance money, right?
For insurance money. Yeah, it's f***ing ridiculous. Yeah. And so this is the perfect example of ostension. There are legends about people poisoning candy. This guy says, oh, I know the perfect way to poison my kid and get insurance money. He doesn't realize that it's a legend and not truth. He thinks it's truth. So he puts the poison in a pixie stick, goes out, puts it in his kid's bag. Kid goes to home. Dad, can I have some of the candy we got today? He gives him the poison pixie stick.
Right.
And he didn't realize that it wasn't true. He didn't realize this really didn't happen. And so when the police started doing the investigation, they're like, oh my God, you know, you're busted.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't really happen. This is an urban legend and you are busted.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony is it didn't happen until this guy made it so. And now people do check their candy because of this story of this dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there really is very, very, very few instances of anybody poisoning candy. We interview this guy, Joel Best, who's this kind of urban legend historian. He also deals with urban panics. And he goes, every year the news media comes to me and they ask me the same questions. And every year I tell them the exact same thing. There has never been a recorded case of a kid, of a stranger intentionally like putting a razor blade in candy. So when you see these stories of a pin,
so crazy,
of glass, it is typically the kid or the brother or sister or the parent who's doing it, not to poison their own, just to get attention. Just to be
so
like,
the kid will put a pin in his candy bar, go look what I found,
run up. Or the parent, you know, crazy parents out there, you know, or all this other stuff. But meanwhile, this hysteria has totally taken over. It's become so real that, like, now people won't even, like, you know, go for candy. You know what I'm saying? But it never, ever really happened except by the one guy who did it because
to himself.
You know what I'm saying?
That's so crazy, though, because every year, I mean, my kids are almost out of Halloween age now, but throw it out on the floor. Like I said, you look at those little shitty orange candy ones, you throw them away, and well, there's an apple. That's got to go.
Yeah, no way, right?
But because what you said is there's never been like a razor blade found in an apple or any of those things.
Now, I think in the past like 2 years, we started to get a lot more because, again, we get a lot more copycats now than we've ever done, whether it's clowns, whether it's murder, whether it's anything. You know, it's we live in a society where you see it and then you do it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because of the internet, social media, the whole nine yards.
Well, because you think it's something that's going on. Like you said, like with the father with the poisoning of the candy. Well, obviously this is a thing.
Yeah,
not. It's just a rumor.
Right. Well, like the ice water challenge? Remember that?
Yeah.
You know, like
a couple years ago?
Sure. Like we would never have those things 20 years ago. It's just like you see it on social media. Everyone's doing it.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
I challenge Josh and Dave to do it, and then you guys do it. Right.
Sure. You know, and or whatever it is, like, you know, kids passing out, you know, forcing each other to pass out. Like, I don't know what the instance is, but now we just live in this kind of like very – the game of telephone used to be pretty wide open. You know what I'm saying? And now the game of telephone is very so close. Like, people see it, they do it, and they post it, and then they do it. You know?
Right,
so
right.
So we just live in a kind of repeat, you know, society.
I remember one – when I was in Winnipeg, there was like a water slide, and it's like, oh yeah, some kid, some guy wedged a razor blade. Have you heard this one?
No, but it's like everybody has a story about
the razor blade in the water slide. So when he went down, he got all cut up. So anytime I still go on water slides, I'm always thinking that. Now, how hard would that be to do? There's like a million kids. You would have to stop, take out your razor blade, stick it into the putty.
Right.
You know?
So here's the interesting thing. It's like, who is doing that, right? So back in the day of the candy, it was always it's the sadist. They call him the sadist, right? This is the guy who would do this. Like, who would be so horrific to put a razor blade in candy? It must be a sadist. It must be the other. They call them the other. You know what I'm saying? This is somebody who would want to harm children. And so what it was it happened in the, it started happening in the 70s. And the reason the fear came in the 70s is because there were a lot of different nationalities that were in your neighborhood in the 70s. So you weren't knocking on, you know, Beaver Cleaver's door anymore. You might be knocking on a Hispanic person's door or a black person's door,
right,
or a Korean person's door, you know, and don't get candy from them because who knows what traditions.
Evil foreigners.
Exactly. So it's always about a lot of our things are about the other.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too. I have two last questions for you. Or this was a good one. The father who killed Timmy with the cyanide.
He's nutso.
Completely
dad.
Nuts. And he's finally ends up getting executed maybe 10 years later or something like this. But the best part of all was, it's like there's one point in time where it's like, you've been charged with not with murdering your son, with spoiling Halloween.
Right. Like, he's the man who killed Halloween.
Who ruined Halloween for everybody. And he's like, that's a matter of opinion. Right. What an asshole.
It's Phil Donahue.
Yeah, it's Phil Donahue. Yeah, you guys can go on YouTube and probably find it. Phil Donahue interviews the man who ruined Halloween
and
killed his son.
Right, exactly. Right? You are the man who killed Halloween. You know, I couldn't believe what I was watching. I was like, this is rich. But, you know, it was. So the other thing was, not only that, there was a time in Texas where they weren't executing people. And there was like a moratorium on executions. And the first guy back they wanted to execute after not executing was this dude. And all the people rallied around the people were like, we can't kill anybody. And then they're like, okay, but what about this guy? Yeah. He killed his own kid. He's like, and they're like, you see, they almost gave pause. They're almost like, well, maybe he can go, you know, but it was very interesting.
He ruined Halloween. Kill him. There's people outside with signs with like, you know, like needles drawn on signs. Like,
kill him.
Kill him. He ruined Halloween.
And so he was this a crazy religious nut. And, you know.
Right.
Like evangelical, I forget what it was, and he just like refused to say that he did it.
Yeah.
Everybody knew he did it. He had like a double signature on the insurance policy. Mm. And he was just a crazy freak.
The other one, actually, there was – you use a clip from the movie Urban Legends, and the one that I always heard was the Pop Rocks one.
Mikey eats it with Diet Coke.
Oh, the guy who played Mikey?
Right.
Actually did this? Like that was the Urban Legend?
It was the kid.
The kid in the movie is called Mikey.
No, Mikey likes it. What was it? I can't remember.
So if you eat Pop Rocks and you drink Diet Coke, your head will explode.
Right, your stomach's going to explode. And somehow Mikey, Life Cereal Kid, did it and he died or something like that. I don't know.
Needless to say, I'm sure you didn't research that one for too long.
No, I don't think so.
You never found any cases of someone's stomach exploding from the Pop Rocks.
I actually think we looked at like exploding foods.
Just to have a case of the shits.
Yeah, exactly.
So last question, with all these great things that you've done, I mean, like I said, the movies are great, Killer Legends and Cropsey, and they're really worth checking out. Is this kind of your genre now? Do you want to continue more in this vein of things? Well, plus, you mentioned Killing Fields too, which is kind of in the same world. Is this now, you know, Josh's thing?
I got a lot of things. I like true crime, but weirdly enough, I just finished a movie about a mysterious whale.
Hmm.
I did a movie about a whale called 52: The Search for the Loneliest Whale. And it's still a mystery, and it's still. But we went out to search for a whale, who is a legend, legendary whale.
So you like dealing with this, another form of a legend?
Yeah, yeah. I like these legends. I like kind of demystifying. I like, you know, kind of not taking away the power of the urban legend of the legend, but actually just adding to it. That's the whole fun thing. People, every time you like do a more thorough search, you only add to the legend. You don't take away.
That's true.
And so that's,
there's a kid that you have on there, and he's just kind of a dopey kid. He's got a girl with like green hair, which green, you didn't show. But he said it was something really smart. I said like the legend will eventually fade away, but it takes a long time.
Yeah, he's like, legends last for a long time.
Legends last for a long time.
You know, this kid from Texas.
Yeah. But he was right. I mean, that's the truth.
He is right. And you know, that's what we learned about Cropsey. I went back to the mental institution, the abandoned mental institution, like 3 or 4 years ago, and this is like 10 years after Cropsey had been done. And what was so interesting is the kids had taken Cropsey and they had taken American Horror Story and they had mixed it all together, and now like our movie became a new chapter. And then there was another, like some guy just made a movie called like the Cropsey Incident, where he like, it's about two documentarians going in the woods and then something happens to them. You know what I'm saying? And right. So I just like the idea of people taking these stories and co-opting them and making them their own and adding to them. Well, that's what's fun.
Legends live forever. That's always the saying, right?
Yeah.
What's the last question? What's the most fascinating of all these things that we've talked about to you? Like to me, it was the Halloween story.
I have to admit that my favorite, and I'm trying to get this off the ground, is the devil worshiping. I'm a big like Satanic Panic fan, and so I have a
Satanic Panic. It's great.
Yeah, I have a very specific case of Satanic Panic that I'm trying to.
That'll be the next one.
I think so. Yes.
Well, like I said, man, I'm hooked. I'll tell you what, man, great stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome, dude. All right, thanks to Josh Zeman. Check out his documentary Killer Legends now on Netflix. Creepy and fascinating at all the same time. And thanks again to Josh for sharing more urban legend stories with us. I know you guys love these paranormal, supernatural type shows. I loved them as well. I always thought that that Halloween candy urban legend was real. And it turns out it wasn't until it became real because of the legend. So very, very cool stuff. And speaking of cool stuff, thank you for booking your cabins for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We set sail October 27th. We still have a few cabins left, but as the plot thickens, go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And remember, everything is included in your price, as we know for sure that the Alpha Club, the Bucks of Jericho, or is it Y2 Jackson, will be teaming up on the Jericho Cruise. We know there will be a live Talk Is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, one of my all-time heroes as a kid. There will be a Talk Is Jericho remembering the amazing Eddie Guerrero with Conan and Rey Mysterio Jr. Live on board the ship. And we know the first round of the Sea of Honor tournament held by Ring of Honor has been announced. Jay Lethal versus BJ Whitmer, Christopher Daniels versus Delirious, Marty Scurll versus Rhett Titus, Silas Young versus Flip Gordon, that's bracket number A, bracket B, Mark Briscoe versus Will Ferrara, Adam Page versus Kazarian, Cheeseburger versus Beer City Bruiser, and Jay Briscoe versus Kenny King is bracket two. You know you're going to see Mick Foley doing his 20 Years of Hell stand-up show. You know for sure you're also going to get Impact versus Ring of Honor, and it looks like the match is pretty much official. Sami Callihan versus Marty Scurll will be taking place on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, along with so many others. Pat Patterson Karaoke, Brad Williams, Craig Gass, Ron Funches, Silent Q from the Impractical Jokers doing stand-up comedy, Fozzy, Corey Taylor, Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, The Dave Spivak Project, The Cherry Bomb, Shoot to Thrill, Blizzard of Ozzy. So many will be there. Kenny Omega will be there as well. The whole Bullet Club will be there. We got so much more to announce and so much more to make official on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Remember, all of these activities are all-inclusive when you book your cabin. You don't have to pay another dime. You get to do all of these things completely for free when you buy your cabin at Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and go be a part of history. Don't miss out. You're not going to want to miss this. We're going to make this an annual destination vacation, and we're setting sail October 27th from Miami to the Bahamas, making history. And speaking of making history, Rolling Stone magazine, one of the greatest rock and roll news publications of the last 50 years, just changed ownership, changed format, and we're going to discuss the history of Rolling Stone magazine right here on Talk Is Jericho. All the ups and downs of the magazine and all the political aspects of it, all the classic rock and roll aspects of it, all the classic covers, the rock and roll stories behind the covers. We'll all be here, Rolling Stone officials, Rolling Stone writers, and Chris Jericho meeting to discuss one of the greatest magazines of the 21st century. We're talking about Rolling Stone magazine on the cover of the Rolling Stone this Wednesday. Until then, have a great weekend. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, stay cool. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Ah, yeah. Don't eat poison Halloween candy.